Welcome to the Autistic License Podcast. I'm Shauna, and I'm in Carrickfergus in Northern Ireland.
I'm Leo in London.
We invite you to listen in on our conversations as we experiment with unmasking in an autistic space. We talk about what it means to discover we're autistic as adults, especially with established careers as therapists. We want people to know that autistic therapists exist and to broaden the conversation about neurodiversity. You're so welcome to join us, whoever you are and wherever in the world you are. We hope you'll find something of interest and connection here.
Like your turn of phrase this morning of saying, shall we record now, which I took to mean now, and apparently in Northern Ireland it means next.
Well, I don't know. I'm interested. It could mean that in Northern Ireland, or it could mean that in my isms. But I kind of freaked out whenever you said, yeah, in 10 minutes. I was like, I've got five tracks that I'm on at the minute. That's not going to happen. So, yeah, I think that's the ADHD thing. Every so often, I feel like my ADHD has free rein, and because it doesn't really like seem like it is actually a disadvantage to me, because it doesn't happen all the time, I like love it whenever I have these days when I just have five tracks going at once and totally keep up and totally love the freedom and the creativity of being like that. So I'm having one of those days today, and trying in the middle of all of those tracks to suss out your energy, not really quite getting at that yet. So I would like you to kind of, you know, fill me in on what your energy is actually like today.
Oh, me? Well, it's not like yours today in so much, but there's a bit of a shift in... I'm just sticking with you for the moment, because I was wondering act of the rhythm of weeks might be for you, because I'm aware that are in the country holidays started for Easter.
Oh yes.
And I wonder if there's a bit of an ending to a kind of a working week cycle that might also have kind of influenced how you're feeling today, like full of energy, wanting to do and being able to do lots of things. And then the second part of that is that I'm really struck by how you describe your, you know, having multiple tracks as being a really joyful thing. You know, you saying you're really loving it. And I think that so often an ADHD experience of multiple tracks can be really distressing or confusing, or a block to being productive or getting things done because of this kind of switching from one thing to another. But you are really immersed in and finding it quite, you know, joyful and actually productive too. You know, you said your creativity is very alive.
Yes. So first of all, I actually don't think it's related to the holidays, because I am actually working some next week and some the week after. And I also get this even when it's not the holidays, you know, and like, you know, that sometimes I get those days when I'm just up and I just go, go, go. Yes. And so, yeah, I don't think it's to do with the holidays. And also my daughter has to do like work, so we're pretty structured over these holidays as well. So, yeah, I don't know what the second bit of your question was there. And I know, and I also have this part that's kind of like, why are you focusing on me? And like really wanting you to come into the conversation.
Okay.
And like just like you're not answering my questions and feeling a bit resistant to going through some kind of a question and answer session.
Okay. Okay. I don't think that was quite in my awareness, but it is now. The reason I was just at that moment, at least, kind of reflecting back to you again, was because there's something quite noticeable about how you described that mood. And the second part was the the joyful part, the fact that it's such a positive experience for you to
well,
have.
Well, I love being like that, yeah, but I think it's exactly. because I don't get it every day. Like, mine just comes and goes. So it doesn't actually get in the way of me on other days. There's some days when it's there and I can't have, you know, so I have to sort of, you know, curtail it in some ways, but it's not there all the time, so I'm not always curtailing it or often curtailing it. But anyway, you've just avoided again. Tell me how the fuck you're doing today, please, Leo, before I get pissed off in anger, as you said earlier.
Get off the fence and say what you really think.
I mean, I've been asking you this all morning. If you read through the text, I've been going, do you want to do this? Do you want to meet? What are we doing? And I've been feeling like I haven't had anything direct, really, which is probably unfair because I probably have had some.
Yeah, you have.
Stuff, and it could be you know, because I'm also on this track.
There were a couple of kind of practical suggestions and they got batted away fairly quickly. and so given that I'm not where you are energy wise, so I'm not having like really strong preferences today, and that the ones that I did express didn't really fit in with what you wanted to do at that moment, I was quite happy to sit back and go, hey, I'll do whatever you feel like doing. These are my time constrictions today, and I don't have huge amounts that has to get done today, and I know that what happens when I do that, not just with you, but with everybody, that can come across as quite frustrating and wishy-washy and sounds like I'm just in quite heavy please others mode. And I think I'm sensing some of that from you today in terms of that kind of frustration, that I won't put my foot down and say, this is what I really want to do and this is what I'm really kind of energized about today.
Yeah, that's really interesting because I hadn't really put it together with that. But okay. I think that could be right, that I, you know, there's not like a kind of a demand that I feel like, I don't feel like I was demanding that we do this recording.
If I just inferred that just now, then I retract whatever bit of it was that sounded like I was inferring you were demanding, because I don't feel that at all. But what I felt like is you were kind of very motivated to do things. But I could also sense that you were stuck, actually, because you weren't sure which thread to follow, if you like, in terms of our conversation today, not in terms of what else you're doing.
Mm. Well, I was stuck because I wasn't getting clarity. I mean, I guess that there's bits that you've said there that just don't ring true, that I've lost it. There is something around... I really wasn't feeling like I absolutely wanted to do this at all. So it wasn't like a strong desire. Definitely not a demand, but I wanted to, I was willing and very, very open to aligning if it happened to be in alignment with what you might be actually wanting to do. Mm-hmm. But I couldn't ascertain what it was that you wanted, and really didn't want to feel like you were just going along with something. And I think that's whenever you said, oh, but I thought you didn't want to release that one, and I thought you didn't want to release that one, and I was going, well, that was so like Thursday, you know. Like,
it was so Thursday.
Like, and it felt like then I was being, you know, put in a decisive mood when I was really very much not in a decisive mood. And sometimes then it's like, right, well, I just need the other person to make an effort and not to just be. I understand that I'm going to be coming across in this episode the same as I did in the episode a couple of weeks ago. Like, I am an absolute nightmare and you're so nice and so understanding and so patient.
No, that's not what's happening. But all that's happening is that we are not aligning as we almost always do in our energy levels and moods. That's all it is. It's a difference, and it's quite a stark difference. and it's one that then becomes noticeable because you're in a different mode. I don't, this is going to sound like Mr. Nice Guy agreeing with everything, but it's not problematic for me at all, and it doesn't make me feel any antipathy towards you that you're in this different place or that you're being demanding or anything like that. Just that I know that I don't think that we can align in those moments in how we want to kind of move forward with whatever it is we want to do today. And actually, what we're doing right now is really lovely because I mentioned parallel play at the beginning, but we haven't given any context to that. Should we say something about kind of the multitasking that's happening, at least at your end?
I'm painting because I wanted to keep doing that because I'm very, very motivated about Martha's house at the minute. I guess nobody else knows what Martha's house is, but
what painting is in this context either.
Well, unless people have listened to other episodes.
Right. Yes.
So there's an episode where I talk about the doll's houses, a couple of episodes where I mention them, and Martha's one of the characters. She's a solo kick-ass mum. Who lives in one of the houses, and I've been renovating the outside of her house because it hasn't been painted for, I don't know, about 6 years. And I did loads of experimentation and got really frustrated. Mm-hmm. And then I've landed on my colour scheme now, which is kind of like a mint arrow, which is a chocolate bar in the UK.
Link in the description.
Like in the description, it's kind of a like a light minty color outside and then like a lovely mocha chocolate color for the windows, and I just found the right roof color. Leo, you won't know this yet, but I just found it this morning on
Amazon.
Well,
I know that's what you were talking about that yesterday, and I am quite invested in the roof color because that was the bit that we talked about a little bit off air the other day. So when you get a moment, I would very much like to see that, or actually probably best when you're done to send me a picture, which would probably be better.
It's that umber color that I said to you about.
Yes.
Like burnt umber.
It was sienna. Umber and sienna were the things you were looking at.
Yes. So that's the color that it's going to be. But I got just like a nice shade. It's called Americano. So I don't know why it's, or like the make of the type of acrylic paint is Americano rather than the normal one that I buy. And it just seems to have a good tone. But it's very hard to see online whether it's actually going to be good in reality. Yes, and
have you started with that colour yet?
No, I only put it in the Amazon basket this morning.
Right. Okay. So I see, it's not there. Oh, right, okay.
No, I'm still doing the windows at the minute, but I found the colour this morning and put it in the basket, so now I have to wait until the basket gets to the free delivery level because I never pay delivery on Amazon, so that might take a good wee while.
What I'm noticing then about this multi-thread mode and comparing it to myself is that I could absolutely get into that too. I do not generally find it joyful. I find it chaotic. I mean, for me, not when you're doing it. I mean, when I'm stuck in kind of, I just blindly move in almost a panic between the, let's say it's 5 threads as well, that I might have going on. And at the worst, that's paralyzing because you get into that mode of, if I'm doing thing A, then I'm by definition not doing things B, C, D, and E. And therefore, I'll either move between them or get completely paralyzed. Or I will kind of move between them. Things will get done, but it'll be frustratingly slow because my energy will be up, hence the multi-threads.
Yeah.
But the kind of the productivity of it will be way down because I won't be completing anything. I'll just be moving anxiously from one thing to another. And so to see you do it and to hear you describe that it's this joyful experience. You love it when it happens, and that actually you are focused. There's I'm watching you now on the video, and you are literally painting your doll's house with that visual part of your brain. You're also able, though, to have a conversation you are able to have a conversation with me at the same time. I don't think I could do that. I think my mind would, in the moments where I'm on thing A, all of my senses would probably be directed to that, and I would find it very difficult to have a side conversation with anybody. Even if they were in the room.
Even if it was something like this, it's very practical. So another thing that I was doing, I've been on and off a webinar recording thing, and I was watching it last night, and then I did a wee bit of that this morning. And like, if I'm doing something like that and I'm concentrating, like, I couldn't have a conversation with somebody else at the same time because I would miss it. But I could totally do this at the same time. So...
If I was, I don't know if it would work like this over Zoom, but if we were in the same room and I was engaged in something like you are, that's kind of creative or visually creative. Or some kind of activity that wasn't about communication. Like, I wouldn't be able to read or write anything useful whilst having a conversation. I think that's what you were just saying as well. But I think I probably would be able to work on something like you're doing there, because that is different.
Sorry, I'm interrupting you.
Sorry.
Is it not just like whenever we're talking sometimes and I'm like, the TV light's on your face? You know, like, I can see all the colours playing all over your face from the TV that's right in front of you, and like, I hardly ever have the TV on, but you have the TV on like a background thing, and for me, I could not have a conversation with all of that light. So for me, when I look at you and the colours are playing all over your face, it feels like, oh, that's so much stimulation that's coming at you, and even that's distracting for me when I'm talking to you, and you're also in my head paying attention to the TV, but you're probably not, because the TV is background for you, whereas when I have the TV on, it's foreground.
Yes, visually it's background. So in those circumstances, the TV would be silent. There's no way that I would be able to concentrate if there was... unless it was just music, actually music.
But if there's
conversation, which is what's generally happening on TV, then no, I wouldn't be able to hold my concentration in either direction. So that would always be muted, but I don't have that kind of visual distraction that I think you're describing. I don't mind there being, you know, pictures flickering around in the background. That doesn't distract me from a conversation with you. Or conversational sound would. And then there's the thing about being kind of accompanied by music. There are, you know, if I'm doing something thinky, which would generally be writing a thing usually, and this would go back to particularly when I've done trainings and I've had to produce written work, which I hate. There are a selection of albums that I would always listen to because they put my brain in a particular place where I can focus in the way that I need to focus. And there are like only 3 or 4 albums that do that for me. I tell you what, I'll make a Spotify playlist of them and I'll stick them in the description so people could see whether that would drive them nuts or whether it's helpful. It's interesting, actually, that by coincidence, my sister's writing an essay right now as we speak, as we record, and she was asking me yesterday, what are those albums that you listen to? And I sent her links to them, and I'm wondering if they were helpful or a hindrance to her. In fact, it's not just that they're helpful, I would find it, I think, very difficult to do intellectually thinky, concentratey things without some background music. I couldn't operate in silence. That would be massively distracting for me. There are very few circumstances where I'd find silence, I mean absolute silence, tolerable, really. I generally do have some kind of, even if it's some kind of white noise, ocean waves or rain especially rain. But the idea of needing some kind of background noise, and whether that's, so I suppose when it's noise, like white noise of some kind, that is because I have tinnitus. I'm very lucky with my experience of tinnitus, which is that it can be drowned out by actual noise rather than the other way around, which would be very, very difficult and distressing. And I feel massive pity for those people who experience it that way. But it does become very distracting in silence. So I'll need some kind of noise. But as I say, when I'm doing a particular kind of thing, there is particular music that I would want to, or particular kinds of music that will actually help focus my mind on a particular. And you're not, as you're sat there, apart from talking to me right now, you wouldn't normally have anything else going on, would you? While you're doing,
I would have my music on. Like, but I can, you know, there's times in my day that I don't have my music on, so I don't need it on. You know, it just it might do it sometimes, it might not. But I also talk to myself, so you know, it's quite possible that if the music wasn't on and I wasn't talking to you, I would be talking to myself. While I'm doing this.
When did you become aware that that's something you did? Do you know that? No, I tell you why I'm asking is because there's all kinds of things that I always said, well, I don't do that, so I can't be autistic, for, you know, for years up until I actually started taking it seriously. You know, things like eye contact or, you know, forming friendships and maintaining relationships. And of course, now I understand the massive efforts that I've had to make those things happen. And they're not automatic or natural. But one of the ones was something, you know, like echolalia or just talking to yourself. And I also, well, I definitely don't do that. I bloody do. I do it all the time. I don't know how I never noticed that. But it's only, I would say, in the last year, maybe, that I find, and actually, this would be a nice thing to exchange information about our experiences, and I wonder how similar they are. I will commentate, I think, on things. So it will be like kind of commenting out loud to myself about what I've just done or what I'm about to do.
And
that's one version of it. And another one that I've noticed that I do is I do externalize my inner monologue. So I'll be having a thought process, particularly now I think about it, particularly when it's an imagined conversation or a predictable, you know, something, a conversation that I might be about to have or I'm thinking about having, then that gets rehearsed kind of out loud. Or I just thought of a third version of that. If something's really pissed me off, I will externalize the imagined criticism or telling off of the person or the thing that can happen out loud. The more I'm describing these things to you, the more versions of them I'm realizing there are, and that pretty much actually most of what goes on in my head can be verbalized in certain circumstances, I think. Because even happy joyfulness, you know, things that I'm very pleased about, I will actually exclaim out loud and describe to, I don't know who I'm talking to. I don't think I have a person in mind unless it's one of those specific conversation rehearsals that I was just talking about. But I do it. I do it in the car. I do it when I'm about in the house. And not knowing kind of what order these things are being released, the circumstance of me at home this week is I'm on my own. Like my wife is away in the States for a week. And so it's very rare that I'm alone for this amount of time. And out of that conversation in a previous recording, which we haven't released yet, there's a whole thing about loneliness. But in terms of just the experience of kind of being okay and just being in my own space, I am realizing more and more, especially as while I'm describing this to you right now, how much of my inner monologue gets externalized.
Because there's nobody to hear it, so you don't have to
I'm not suppressing it. Maybe that's a good point. Probably while there are people around, I would naturally suppress
it. We do naturally,
but
don't
you see,
we?
The thing is, I don't know that I do. I'm only guessing. Because maybe that's something that I do a lot and people are used to it. Or that they it's weird and so they don't comment on it. We don't know these things often. It's like so many of the questionnaires and tick boxes about, are you autistic? So many of them are kind of unanswerable. Like, I have said this before, you know, do people often get offended at things you say, even when you don't mean to be offensive? And but you wouldn't know that, because generally speaking, people don't tell you.
Although, as we said before, some of us feel that we can tell that.
Would you tell me a little bit about your experience then of verbalizing your inner monologue, or what talking out loud or talking to yourself, as we kind of call it, what that means to you, how that happens?
some of it is the same as yours, exactly the same as yours. And, you know, I think that it's like we don't know this until somebody tells us. And I think that's why, you know, we maybe notice it in our children, you know, and then, you know, somebody says, like, do they script? Do they do this? Right. Well, yeah, absolutely, because I hear them talking to themselves. But, you know, it can be then a revelation to realize that when I realized that when I got a chance, I did it. So I would always talk away to myself in the car. And so, yeah, it's, I just talk to myself about everything and I go over things and I enjoy things. So, like, you know, I remember like doing training, like nervous system training with Dev Dana and her talking about glimmers and, you know, like how you can lean in and get a glow and like realize and that actually probably as autistic people were really good at that. Like, because we see something we really like and then we feel it more. Like it's kind of like it doesn't have to be a discipline, you know, and it's not that hard to stay with. So even like our conversations or any conversation that I have with anybody that has like enlivened me or like I've enjoyed, then I could like replay it and replay the feeling of enjoyment or connection or like saying something that was funny or hearing something that was funny. Or it's like just a natural thing to replay that and feel it again. You can only feel it again by saying it again, for me. So then if I want to get back into the moment of that happening, then I have to say my part of it. And then I can feel, and then I can imagine obviously the other person saying whatever they saw or said, or, you know, all that comes back. But for me to get back into it, it's really, really natural to say it again. And I think that I'm just as prone to do that. Like whenever you said that you rehearse maybe conversations when you're angry with somebody or whatever, like I can see, and obviously that's very, very common, but I can see how I do it just as much when something has been enjoyable. I think that's often why as well, like it can be hard or different to come down from things and come down from interactions, because that's how I process everything. It's like true. Other people will maybe just have like enjoyable moments and love them at the time and then get on with their lives. But you know, whatever the moment, I have to process the whole thing and go over it if it's been enjoyable. Also, of course, go over it if it's been hard as well.
Yeah.
But you know, it's all part of the complex way in which we take things in and then process them through and out that takes so long, maybe partly because we also savour them and like enjoy them. And it feels part of that is to like go over it again in a verbal way with myself.
So much has occurred to me while you've been talking there. Wow. So I'll go in the order that I made some notes while you were talking there. So one is about the thing about the car. Now, that's a really difficult thing to know how common that is, because A, it is the private space where all people who have cars and get to go in them on their own would exercise the talking to themselves part.
Yeah.
But secondly, it's also very public. So that's the also the only time that we get to see other people doing it, probably.
Yeah,
so it is very difficult to judge how common that is, because A, it's the environment that would probably encourage it most for most people.
Yeah.
And B, it's the only visibility we would have of other people doing it.
And
are they singing? Are they talking? That's difficult to say. And I remember now, let me think when it would be. Mid-90s was the first time that I bought an earpiece for my mobile phone, and nobody had one, really.
No, I'm sure hardly anybody
but
had
I remember being
mobile.
So incredibly conscious of what it looked like that I was just talking to myself. And that people would think that that was absolutely crazy behaviour, because nobody was doing it then. And now, of course, you can't tell necessarily if somebody is talking to themselves, or the assumption usually is that they're talking into a phone, because we all have phones and many of us have earpods and stuff to have those invisible conversations.
Yes.
And then what really struck me, and this is yet another one of those oh, that's an autistic thing that I don't do. And then it's just come to me that I absolutely do it. So we've talked before about the length of time for you that it takes to come down from a high energy experience. And yes, specifically, in a very early episode, we talked about that in the context of you going to a gig and seeing a band. Yes. And that up energy took a couple of days, I think you were saying, to kind of come down.
Maybe more. Yes, okay. That's a good example.
And that's one of the things that I think that I've thought, well, I don't do that. I know I process thinky things very slowly and over and over. But it was only when you just put it into the context of replaying in your head in order to process that I realised, yes, that's definitely me as well. And it's because there was something about how you were describing it just then that put me in mind of a particular gig I went to. This is 18 years ago, I know exactly when it was. It was in 2006. And friends of mine that I was with had, and I'm not going to tell the story, but had an interaction with the band that we'd gone to see. And it was a really big thrill. I mean, it was a really big deal. It took me a week to kind of be able to sleep. Because this is the other thing that I remember you saying, and me thinking, well, I don't lose sleep just because I'm excited after an event. I absolutely did. I didn't sleep for a week properly at all. And all of that time, all of that processing was exactly what you described. It was replaying conversations that had happened. Replaying, I mean, in real time, like watching a movie, like listening to a real time recording. And probably much of that was out loud as well. And I mean, I say a week, it was actually probably longer than that, because that was a particularly big kind of profound event that was very, very exciting.
And did it happen to your friends just, or did it happen to you?
That processing thing?
No, the actual interaction. Whatever it is.
No,
it was, yeah, it whatever was, it is that
it
happened.
It was the three of us. Who just by coincidence met the members of the band before the gig, and they kind of knew who we were through this very bizarre set of circumstances. And so it was just this, and then, you know, we got name checked during the gig by the band. It was really an incredibly exciting thing to happen.
And is this the bare naked ladies thing?
It is. The interaction with the bare naked ladies.
Why not telling the story? Tell the story. It's a good story.
Really?
Why do you not want to tell the story? I don't know why you're being so cryptic about it.
I don't know. It doesn't. Is this an autistic experience even, or is it relevant?
Well, we talk about ourselves. It doesn't. We do. Yes, it's an autistic experience because you're making sense of it from an autistic point of view.
The processing of it afterwards, as I'm describing now, that was certainly an autistic experience. So, so myself and a couple of friends, we make music together. And at one point, which would have been nearly 20 years ago, we did a gig at a local folk club and we videoed it. And there are a couple of songs that we performed that night that I put on YouTube at the time. And one of them was a cover of a song by the Canadian band Bare Naked Ladies, who we really like. And when we went to go and see them perform in London, when they came over, we were on our way into the gig, and the lead singer, who was wandering about having got himself a coffee, spotted us and recognised us because he'd seen the YouTube video of us performing one of their songs. And in fact, it turns out the whole band had seen it. So we were, you know, like approached by the lead singer of the band, which was quite a thing. So we had a little interaction with him, and he described, you know, that one of the guys had found our video and passed it round, and they'd enjoyed it, etc. And then when we went into the gig, halfway through, he told the audience of the Hammersmith Odeon of 6,000 people, he told the story of having met us outside before the gig. So it was this, you know, it was huge, and we got, you know, everybody was cheering. Not only that, but that gig was recorded as a live recording by them and released. And so that story was part of an album that came out digitally, and therefore lots of people, like 15,000, I think, at the last count, watched the video of us on YouTube because they heard the story on the album. It was a very big... And then there were subsequent kind of interactions with the band after that followed from that. But that was... This is a band that we really kind of worshipped and like an awful lot. So mm-hmm. I just remember driving back. I stayed with my friends that night, and just the buzz. Obviously, I think anybody who met a hero in that way would buzz from it for a long time. But it's only now, you know, 18 years later, telling you this story again, that I'm remembering how it was almost uncomfortable. I would actually say it was almost uncomfortable that I couldn't wind down from that for so long.
Yeah.
And that I think me playing the experience, as I say, in the cinema of my mind in real time over and over became almost uncomfortable. I kind of needed it to die down. And I'm talking, I suppose, after 2 or 3 days.
Yes.
And the other thing, of course, because they had recorded that gig, I had the recording of that bit of the gig immediately afterwards, because they did this great thing of they digitally recorded the gig and immediately mass produced it on memory sticks, and you could buy it on the way out from the gig, the gig that you'd just been to. So I had that in my possession as well. So it wasn't just playing over in my mind. I actually got to actually play it over two or bits of it anyway, the bits that happened in the gig.
Yes,
I did notice that we were all very excited by that. Of course we were. But I did notice, I think, that my friends that I was with and who were, you know, involved in that same interaction seemed to get over it way, way quicker than I did.
And people have to. Like, I think that what you're describing is like the overwhelm, and something can be almost too exciting and too good. And I remember as a parent knowing that about my daughter and having to make decisions around, like, whenever she was certain ages, like something that I knew she would like but could just be too much, like too exciting, and it would just take too much to wind her down from. You know, and also noticing that myself, like I'll make really, really careful decisions as to when I go out to something that I might really, really like, because I need to have my time afterwards, and I need to understand, because like you say, it can be really uncomfortable, or even if not really uncomfortable, just really inconvenient and irresponsible, you know, because you actually have to do something, and you don't have time for the crash afterwards. And this was something that was completely not planned by you, so you hadn't necessarily built in time this opportunity to come along, and you know, so there was that spontaneous nature, which can be really, really attractive, obviously, and the ADHD loves that, but the autistic, you know, mind as well is like, fuck, what just happened? Like, I might not have chosen for that to happen just then at this exact point. And you know, I mean, I know you probably say, well, of course I want it to happen, but you know what I mean, like sometimes it can just be too much and you just need the stimulation to stop. And I think that's why I don't do, like, I often like don't do so-called exciting things, like, because I know the toll that they're going to take. And so, you know, at times it might be like, oh, you're really boring, you know, but it's no, actually I have to protect what's going to happen after this. And I think that's, you know, when somebody said, well, you'd really enjoy it. It's like, well, that's not actually the only consideration here. Like, I might really enjoy it, but that's not the be all and end all for me. It's not just a case of I might enjoy it. It's maybe it might be too much.
You're absolutely right. You're so right. And again, I'd never framed it like that myself. And also there is, I'm guessing, an enhanced ability and need to do that replaying. I think most people probably can't do that. And maybe that's also one of the reasons, well, it's chicken and egg. I don't know which way around this is. Does it take us much longer to process those things because we are able to replay them and replay them?
Oh, yeah.
Or do we need to replay them and replay them in order to process? I don't know whether one delays the other or the other is just necessarily that long. But, you know, I think of how well developed that bit of my own memory is, that replaying thing. I know that a lot of us, because of masking, are really good mimics. And I, you know, I can do accents really fast because I can tune into patterns of speech really fast. But the other thing I know I can do, again, which was something that I got lots of praise for when I was little and younger, is kind of recite sketches. You know, I'm of an age that grew up with Monty Python, for example, who I completely obsessed over in the 70s. And I just knew and I still do know dozens and dozens of Monty Python sketches absolutely off by heart. And when the family was away on holiday, on camping holidays, I'd be the entertainment. They could request a sketch and I would just repeat it. But to the point where if I have ever come across other people, and I did as a kid particularly, you know, meet other people who knew the same sketches as me and we could kind of perform them together, it would irritate the fuck out of me if they got one syllable wrong or the intonation wrong, which is ridiculous. But it's that enhanced need stroke ability to mimic, to record and play back. In our brains.
But we also take it. It's also because we take in so much. And that's where we're often, you know, described as slow or slow process. And well, actually, you know, we just take it all in. And so I think that maybe, like, in a highly stimulating environment, part of the synaptic pruning in neurotypicals' brains that we don't have, because we've got so much interconnectivity within our brains, that's what, you know, brain imaging and all would show. Like, neurotypicals have had the synaptic pruning, so they're not going to take in the same amount of information. So then they're not going to have so much to process. You know, it's just not going to be that stimulating for them. Which obviously means that you could say, oh, they miss out. But in a lot of life, actually, that's very functional. And that's why we can be seen as disordered, because we haven't actually gone through the supposedly developmental stages of that pruning. Like, our brains didn't do that when we were little. And so that was seen as a disorder and a developmental delay. But actually, there's a loss. And I guess, I mean, there's a loss for everybody whenever they grow up. You know, we all lose some of that capacity for sensory, stimulation. Like, we don't have half as much, and nobody has half as much as they had whenever they were a baby. But I think that as autistic people, we retain a hell of a lot more than non-autistic people. And if it was seen in a more balanced way as actually meaning that we got some more pleasure out of things than non-autistic people, you know, it could actually be less pathologized. And like, if it was simply seen as that, like, you will get more pleasure out of this and therefore you need to moderate how much you do, like, that's much more functional than, oh, that's going to overwhelm you because you are, you know, you've got a sensory processing disorder. You know, like, it's a completely different way of seeing it.
I loved when I came across, and it was relatively recently, that concept of synaptic pruning, I'd love to come back to that sometime and talk more about that, because that's one of the few, for me, kind of bits of neurology and science that maps so perfectly to how I now understand my brain works and what effects that has on my processing. It really resonated. It's a lovely concept, and I think it's partly a word thing, that so many so many things, when they get their names and phrases that are coined to describe them, and I'm thinking here, for example, double empathy problem, it took me so long to get my head around what that was, because to me, that name didn't quite match up what it was describing. Okay. But synaptic pruning really, really does. It's such a lovely, literal, real world phrase. I really want to come back and talk more about that. But thank you for bringing that in at that moment, because that is what we've been talking about then, is the actual practical experience of that. and
of that, yeah.
And the other thing also that I thought I would come back to, because I mentioned it right at the beginning, and there'll be people who don't know what it is the idea of echolalia, which
is
one of the other things that I always say, well, that's not me, I don't do that, and I totally do.
Yes.
And do you, before we kind of go into what it is?
I do it all the time, and I think I always knew it about myself because of my fascination with words. So I'd have always been somebody that would repeat words over and over and over to myself because of the delicious way that they felt in my mind. Like literally the delicious way that they felt and the way that they sounded. But yes, I totally do, like turns of phrase or somebody, like if I read something that just lyrically sounds a certain way, like I'll say it out loud.
Yes.
So when I read, I'll read a sentence out loud because I want to hear it and appreciate how the author has written it like that. And like even words like synaptic pruning, you know, like learning things like that, like they get stuck in my head because I'll have repeated them so many times. It's like a way of learning, I think, that from childhood, that was just a way that I learned. So, you know, someone would tell me, this is an adjective, and I would say, adjective, you know, and then that would be like in me then, you know. So I think it's a highly effective way of learning, and I definitely do it. I do it when I'm on my own, and I do it with song lyrics, like over and over and over and over again. Not in a, like, I'm going to teach myself this because I want to know it, but just in a, like, the delight of just hearing it and appreciating it. And I think that's what echolalia is. And I mean, my daughter taught herself to talk through echolalia. Like, you just would hear her repeat. And then it all came out, and she was able to do the, like, you and me conversations. But I got to actually witness the learning that went on, that other outside people were going, oh, that's really disturbing, you know, she's not answering, she's repeating. And it's like, no. Well, I didn't know at the time, I just was letting her be herself.
Yeah.
But, you know, just realising that it was actually quite an ingenious way that some of us learn. And I know that I wouldn't know as many words, and I wouldn't enjoy words and language and retain as much information if I didn't spontaneously use echolalia.
And that's the important thing, is spontaneously, isn't it? It's not a deliberate act. And
it's not a deliberate,
and probably for big chunks of time it's involuntary as well. I think that's actually part of the definition. I was just checking on the definition, it's so fucking horrible. There's one dictionary that describes it, the meaningless repetition of words
just spoken by another person
occurring as a symptom of mental conditions.
Fuck off. That's the kind of thing that I would hear. And I was like, okay, whatever, let's just wait and see. And as often I was right. So, but yeah, it's things like that. Meaningless. Like, why would we do something if it was meaningless? So insulting.
And that is very much, though, that's an observational comment, isn't it? Because what it can look like is something like Tourette's, for example.
Because
to an observer, they might not actually see what the root of it was, or what it is that you're just, that you're talking out loud to yourself. And maybe especially if it's in a repetitive nature, that's jarring to a lot of people who haven't experienced it, whereas actually it's not necessarily uncomfortable. In fact, it's could we say it's really uncomfortable? Joyous. I don't think it is. It's not very often that it's an uncomfortable thing, whereas people that I've known who live with Tourette's, then that can be something that you're desperately trying to suppress a lot of the time. But then again, only because of the effect it's having on other
people. The effect on other people, rather. Mm. I suppose it's the same as stimming.
Yes.
You know, stimming is seen the same way. It's uncomfortable to other people, but it's actually highly enjoyable, you know, whenever you're actually doing it.
And necessary sometimes as well.
Enjoyable and necessary,
We need it sometimes to keep our energy at a manageable level while we're interacting with a person or a thing, for example.
Nearly all of my chocolate windows have a first coat on them. And I'm kind of going round the edges of the windows now. Now, this is a bit that I'm doing okay today, but often I leave for Ricky to do because he's got such a better eye than I do for, like, blending it in. But I'm tearing on ahead. He's in London actually at the minute, so we can't do very much about it. Normally he would be here on a Saturday, so he can't really do anything about me going ahead with this. He would have probably intervened if he was here, but he's in your part of the country right
now. That's right, and in my country, yeah. In fact, depending on how we define the word country, which I said before, is really confusing if you're from the United Kingdom.
Oh, yes, okay.
It's, yeah, England's a country, Great Britain's a country, United Kingdom's a country, and they're all different.
So what else do we need to talk about?
I think that felt really, really nice and contained and neat. And we have over an hour. That was over an hour.
Was it over an hour? Okay. Well, let's just stop the recording.
I think so. Thank you so much. Thank you so much for pushing for this today. Pushing, not nagging, not insisting, or whatever it was. What did you say before? You described it as, and it's not fair. You demanding is what you said. It wasn't demanding. It was inspirational.
Didn't. I suggested that it might be the way to get something available to edit if you wanted to.
Yes.
But I don't even like maybe suggesting, but in a really unattached kind of a way.
I take that, yes.
Yeah.
It's a totally reasonable explanation. But I'm just, all I'm doing is expressing gratitude that you did do that.
Yes.
And this has been a little bit different, and this was your suggestion, was that you're doing a thing, which is you're painting your doll's house, and you can simultaneously see what a conversation would be like. And actually, I think if we never mentioned the idea that you were doing something else at the same time, I don't think it would be noticeable, other than the references that we've made to it. I don't think that conversation it's made a massive difference.
Well, that'll be really interesting for me whenever I listen over the recording, whether I can hear, like, is there gaps for me, or do I not sound as focused as I usually sound, or anything like that? Because I am, like, I'm probably looking at you just as much. Like, I do look up and I search for the screen.
I noticed that.
You know, so it's not checking anything, like, it's not changing
that. No, my experience of it has been that, no, there's no difference. I think just to listen to it, that you don't sound distracted, you don't sound like the rhythm of your speech or thinking is interrupted in any way, which I think is amazing, because you are doing something else pretty intricate. You've obviously got a really well-honed skill of dividing those bits of your concentration up really well. I don't think I could, that's what I was saying at the beginning, I don't think I can do that.
It would be interesting to see if you could do it. But, you know, it's also, it's just the same as, like, you know, children in school, like, are told that they're not paying attention if they're doodling or they're looking out the window, or...
That was certainly my experience, actually, yeah, very much so.
They can. I mean, if, I guess what you're saying is, if someone was looking at a video of me and not listening to the conversation, like, they might think she's not paying any attention. She's totally focused in on what she's painting. She's not listening or paying attention to him. And yet, if they heard the conversation, they might be like, yeah, it's totally fine.
I think
that's it. Like, that's a child in school.
Okay, so that's very important, as you were just describing, of something that is very familiar to me, which is to be told off at school for not concentrating. And that actually goes, just generally speaking, with the whole thing about eye contact, doesn't it?
That
if you're speaking to somebody who's not used to that, a lack of eye contact, or a different, you know, they will assume that you're not concentrating, or you're not listening, or that you're being incredibly rude.
Not listening to them. Yes. All right. I'll say goodbye.
we'll say cheerio from my office in your doll's house room.
Yeah. See you next week.
Bye-bye, everyone.
Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening to the Autistic License podcast. You can connect with us via Instagram, Facebook at autisticlicense.com, or by email at autisticlicense@gmail.com. And we spell license the British way, L-I-C-E-N-C-E. We also have a thriving Facebook community. Search for Autistic License Shauna and Leo, or click on the link in the show notes.